Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's...
Gobble, 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 gobble.
Just so you're aware...
Gobble, 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 gobble.
Just so you're aware, Kevin, we're doing Frank Rich's intro now.
Oh, damn.
Did you want to go to favorite things?
I thought we were doing favorite things.
No, no, no. Let's keep going. We'll do favorite things. I'm fine. I'm flexible. Let's go.
Sorry.
No, let's go. I'm ready for
leave this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because okay, I messed up.
I think it's charming.
Gobble, 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 gobble. Okay. You know why, Rob?
Well,
you know why?
Because today's Turkey Day.
It's Thanksgiving.
It's turkey lurkey time.
I hope you guys are having a wonderful time preparing, getting your stomachs ready, getting your livers ready, getting your family ready.
For the drinking?
Getting everything ready. Yeah, I cannot wait to eat. I love Thanksgiving.
What's your favorite food of Thanksgiving?
Well, my family, we're very traditional, but I must say that in my family, we make a mean green bean casserole, and a green bean casserole is you always have to make enough that you have it for Thanksgiving, and then invariably at 9 o'clock at night when you bring the leftovers out again for like second Thanksgiving, you make turkey sandwiches. There always has to be enough green bean casserole left over so you can eat that.
This is very specific.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you? No, I love it. I love it. Minus stuffing.
We're together, by the way, for the first time, you guys. Rob and I are in the same room recording, which we're very excited about.
It's a little weird because I'm looking at you face to face.
I know. I'm a little nervous, and you don't have your headphones on. And the reason why you thought that Rob thought we were doing Frank Rich's introduction is because
I said, hey, let's record Frank Rich's introduction.
Okay, well, I got excited about my favorite
and
thing.
Got off the rails again.
Thanksgiving, and that we're going to call Frank Rich in a little bit, and we're going to have a little chat with him.
Little chat. Yeah. Little chat. He's only giving
time is very, very, very short.
It is. Okay, so we've been trying to get him now since we started this. And he was finally like, God bless him. He's like, I'll tell you what happened when we first reached out to him. I reached out to him right before the election. And he was like, I have to write a piece, but after the election, things should get quieter. Not the case at all.
Mr. Rich is a little busy.
Not the case at all. So he's a little busy. Plus, he's the executive producer on Veep.
Oh, yeah. And my New York magazine that I get every week or every 2 weeks, he's like the major political writer for that.
Absolutely.
I mean, he runs front page articles for them.
So he is so kind. He is giving us half an hour.
Very nice.
Via the phone. And we're very excited about that. I'll take him any way that I can get him. So I'm very excited. I'm wondering, you know, John Simon is still alive.
We have got to get John. And I just saw him like a couple of weeks ago.
He was on Theater Talk, right?
Yes.
Did you see that
and
too?
And he looks great. I mean,
he looks
fabulous. Like, and I've been reading a lot of books lately that take place in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And he was around a lot. I mean, he's got opinions too. And I just think it would be really interesting to get some of his opinions.
Offensive opinions, but opinions nonetheless.
I saw an article in the New York Times book review about Book on Tape that has made a resurgence.
Yes. What is it?
Stories of Dorothy Parker, read by Elaine Stritch.
What?
Yes. From 1995 that she made this. And then they just released it on audio tape. So I didn't even know I had this app on my phone, the Books app, and you can go to Audible or whatever, and you can download the audio book. And it's Stritch, and it's prime Stritch. And I'm telling you, Stritch reading Dorothy Parker, it's great. It's $11. It is so worth it. So I just got to give a little. That's not my favorite thing today, but I just had to give a little
Elaine
shout out
on that. Doing Dorothy. Yeah. I wonder what other like authors Elaine Stritch could have done at like some point in her life. Like, would you want her to hear like Dr. Seuss?
Sophie Tucker.
Sophie Tucker. Like, no.
No.
I want to hear Dr. Seuss.
Oh, like you're thinking like
Green Eggs and Ham.
You're thinking really outside the box. Like
Sam I Am.
I do not like it in a car. I do not like it in a bar.
Yeah. No, she likes it in a bar. She likes it. I love it in a car. I love it in a bar.
Who's got the booze? Where's
Who's
the
got
gin?
The booze?
You got a little small ones?
One fish, three fish. Wrong.
She always had a shot of Fernet before she make any entrance.
Wrong.
Because it helped her. It's a digestif.
Oh.
So it helped her stomach when she would go on stage. Although I don't know if you necessarily need a shot before every entrance.
No.
Nonetheless, she did.
Cat in the Hat was Ben Gazzara. I was a virgin till I was 102. And I'm going to talk through a song. Don't give it to me. She doesn't remember. It's right there on the page, Elaine.
It's right there.
It's just a book on tape.
It is.
I wonder what else she would do. That's so good. I like think this. Her Dr. Seuss would be good.
Dr. Seuss would be a really good
one. I do not
one.
Want to have her read the Bible.
No.
Well, she was
no.
there, so she probably could have corrected it.
Just the New Testament.
Turn the water into a gimlet. It's not at all correct.
So wrong.
Not at all. I'm just sharing. Hey, guess what I'm seeing again tomorrow?
What?
The prom.
You lucky duck.
I'm seeing it twice.
Why? Now, how'd you get? Why are you getting?
Because my assistant Ben is on the marketing team.
Fantastic.
So I begged him.
Oh, I think it's going to be. I can't wait to see it again because I know it's going to be even better the second time.
Everyone
just
go
like
see the
Chaperone. Yes.
Just like the Drowsy
I'm serious,
Chaperone.
The more I put into that show, the more I got out of it, and my sides are still hurting. It's yes. Yeah, and I'm very happy about the reviews.
Me
they were
too.
Good reviews.
They were glowing reviews.
They were, you know, they were. I thought that they nailed it, and they really said what the great things were about the show. Yes. And yeah,
hey folks, The Prom is not based on a movie. It doesn't have a cast of, you know, reality star celebrities in it. So go out and support it. It's exactly what we're looking for. It's new musical theater. New musical theater. Go out and support it.
It's a love letter to musical comedy.
It really is a love letter to musical comedy. Yeah. So please go. Yeah. Go.
Go.
I saw a Chorus Line at Encores.
Ooh. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
All original choreography.
All original
choreography. Bobby Dion was in Bayarka Lee. You were both part of it.
I don't think they can do anything that isn't the original choreography.
Now that is really fascinating to me. And I think I sent you a text because we hung out that day that you went to go see it. How do they keep that the law of the land that that you don't reinvent it? We're going to only do the Michael Bennett choreography. And I'm not saying you should, but I, you know, we do. I don't know.
I think it's contractual, like the West Side Story and the Fiddler on the Roof stuff. That the choreography is so much a part of the performance that you can't take it away. So I think contractually they're obligated to do the Michael Bennett choreography. If anybody knows more on this, please like tweet at us and let us know.
Because like in the regions, you don't have to do the Michael Bennett choreography.
Oh, I've seen a lot of regional community theater productions and they don't do it well, but they're doing it.
Okay.
They're doing it. I once did it at a children's theater.
Wow.
That was awkward.
That's
with teenagers.
The tits and ass really was not.
Oh, no, they still did. And it was kids like 16 through 19. Mm. I saw it at a place that was even younger than that, mm-mm, where they were like 9 through 13.
Nope.
There were 40 kids on the line. She didn't say tits and ass. She said this and that, and still did the same choreography, though.
This and that.
So she was still pointing to her breasts and
so
her rear.
So it was just the elephant in the room all of a sudden.
Yes.
It was like everyone knows what you're talking
but
about.
Can I tell you the best moment of the show?
Yes, please.
Is when Zach, the director, came on stage.
Yes.
And he was 13, obviously. He was the most mature person. Yeah. And he said, I'm going to choose... Contemplative pause. I'm going to choose... Contemplative pause. All of you! And everyone got to be in the show.
Oh... That's really sweet.
I was upset they did not do this production at City Center.
That's exactly how show business is.
When Tony Yazbek comes out and goes, I choose all
everybody.
Of you. Boy, Robin Herter is a star. She played Cassie.
Okay.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's what you said. That's
oh,
very
my
exciting.
God. She was good. She's going to be in Moulin Rouge coming up pretty soon.
Oh,
so
okay. I was wondering what we're
going to
see her
oh,
in.
Shoot. She's good.
Which they just announced for next year.
Next year.
That's
and
great.
It's going to go into the Hirschfeld.
Good for them.
Yeah. Where Kinky Boots was.
Yes, the old Martin Beck Theater.
The old Martin Beck. Kevin and I were talking
Sorry, guys,
before we went
been,
on the air.
I've been on this kick lately of trying to call the old theaters by their old name by being like, yeah, I'm going to go see Mean Girls at the Anta Theater tonight. I'm sorry.
Kevin said, meet me at the Marasco. I'm like, that's a Starbucks, Kevin. There's no show here anymore.
We'll be at the 46th Street Theater.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a couple of episodes coming up. What else is going on? Anything else big in the theater world?
Oh.
Did you see the casting for that Fosse Verdon
Boy,
television
that's exciting.
Series?
You know what? How can you believe all this musical theater stuff that's getting made and just all these stories that they're discovering and being told? I think it's so exciting. It's FX series. They do good work there.
Yes.
It's going to be like, what, 8 or 9 part series.
Yep. It's Sam Rockwell as Bob Fosse.
Michelle Williams.
The great Michelle Williams,
but
who
then
I like
really,
a lot.
They're hiring Broadway people. So
yes.
I really appreciate that. And
it's an incredible cast. I'm trying to see if I can find it here.
Bianca, the lady from Mexico.
Not Bianca Del Rio.
No. The one playing Cheetah Rivera. I just worked with her last year on the concert of And the World Goes Around. She was
You do a lot of those concerts, don't you?
Yeah, so do you.
You love doing them though, right?
I do.
I can't find my list here, darn it.
Oh, that's
but
doing.
It's like I know like Byron Jennings is playing George Abbott. How cool is that? Evan Handler is going to be Hal Prince.
Yep.
Laura Osnes is Shirley MacLaine.
Ethan Slater
is going to be Joel Grey.
For him.
I love him. Boy, he was robbed. I have no problem saying that.
And do you
that
think that it
robbed.
Will do something for the history? You know, if all these Americans now see this, they're not gonna, they probably don't know anything about Fosse or Gwen Verdon. And now they're going to watch this and they're going to learn more about them. Do you
yes.
think that it'll make mean that we're going to see more Fosse work being done? Do you think that there will be a correlation in that? You know, that now that it's in everyone's sort of lexicon, they'll be hungry. Chicago will stay open for 10 more years. And I don't know. I just wonder if this is good that we're educating people on the history of Broadway, that we're using those stories as viable stories.
I'm trying to think because, I mean, his big works are Sweet Charity, mm-hmm. which maybe that'll have a resurgence.
Maybe.
Pippin, I think it's hard to separate in people's minds from the most recent revival because mm-hmm. now everybody wants to do it like it takes place in a right. circus. So I don't know if that's ready to go back to what he had created right. originally. Chicago is done all the time. I don't know. I mean, unless people are like, hey, let's do New Girl in Town again.
I'm dying to do Redhead.
Yeah, I'm dying. You know what's funny? I actually am dying to do Redhead. I want to see a production of it.
Well, maybe you can get Gwen Verdon to come back. Because I heard the only reason why it was any good at all was because of Gwen Verdon.
Gwen, are you willing to come back? I'm unavailable. I can't do it. I can't do it, Gwen Verdon. I'm trying, though.
I'm unavailable.
That's it. That's good.
I'm trying.
That's good. Yeah. I only saw her in... You remember the movie Cocoon? She shows up in Cocoon for a little bit.
Donna Meachie.
Yeah, Donna Meachie. Yeah. A great musical theater actor.
Goldilocks.
The
hello.
Great Donna Meachie. And Henry Sweet Henry, right?
Yes. Good job.
I don't know if you've noticed. So in my hallway, which is where we're recording today, which, you know, this is great for a podcast, the visual references. My hallway is a hall of records, so it's a whole bunch of different records. But there are 26 frames. Why? One for each letter of the alphabet. And what I'm doing, Kevin, is now this is going to be like a Joe Allen's type thing. All the albums up there are going to be flops.
I like that.
Well, not flops, underappreciated.
Are they going to be like... In alphabetical order. So
yes.
Z is like Zulu and Zenda.
Yes.
Or Zenda.
Yes.
Or I have
yes.
Zenda if you need Zenda.
Thank you. I was going to say.
Know, Angel could be A.
Angel is A.
See, it's like you're parading it in front of me. It's like you're teasing me with that Counts album.
You'll listen Angel. To it and be like, I've heard better. So anyway, yeah. So that's wow. That's
fun.
But I cannot wait to watch this biopic. Mm-hmm. Or bio series, I should say. And I hope it's fabulous. And
I'm sure it will be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it's... He's already pretty popular. It's not like we're taking...
You're right.
I mean, to me, a more interesting subject. I'd love to see one about Jerome Robbins.
Yeah.
Just the duality that in which he led his life and the House Un-American activities.
There was a lot there.
And the fact that nobody seemed to like the man. And he was such a perfectionist. I don't know. I think he would be an interesting person to take a look at.
And it's fascinating when we hear these stories of the guests that we had that worked with them. I feel like all of them are like, yes, he was genius.
Yeah.
Crazy as a loon, but like genius, but difficult, you know.
Forgiving.
Yeah.
Forgiving for the craziness. I have to ask you, our guest this week was the fabulous Mary Stout. Did you have the salsa?
I'm going to have it tonight, actually.
Are you
later
really?
Tonight. We got chips and
okay.
I'm going to, yeah.
Cool.
I'm excited.
Wish I had some, but that's okay.
Okay, Rob. All
just save some for me. Save some for me. Kevin, I heard that you had a favorite thing, gobble, gobble, and it's not Frank Rich's intro.
Gobble, gobble,
what
gobble,
is your
gobble,
favorite
gobble.
Thing?
All right, my favorite thing is not Thanksgiving related, but it is related to a listener of our podcast. I got to give a shout out.
I'm dropping a mic.
To Lawrence Spinelli, Larry Spinelli, and his wife Arlene. I just got to thank you, Larry, for listening. And Larry, decided to release some of his record collection, and he drove up and gave me some of his collection and to hold on to for a little while. And included in that were some books and some posters and some really great things. And my favorite thing is actually one of the books that he included in that collection that he gave to me, which was so sweet. And I actually went into your bedroom to see if you have the book, Rob, and you do.
Oh, really?
Yes. This book, I have seen the book before. It was published the year
before.
That I think I graduated high school and you graduated, I think not the same year as me, but close. I graduated in 1998.
High school?
Yeah.
I graduated 2001.
Okay. So this book came out in 98. It is basically, I give it away now, it's basically what we do, but in a book. And not like the other books, like Making It on Broadway, like
Cry and Eat Ice Cream,
that Jody Langle wrote. No. It's the history of Broadway in an oral archive, but it's in the book. So you hear the stories of all of these Broadway greats. But because it's the 90s, you get that crossover to the golden age.
What?
So yes, it's like half the people are people we've interviewed.
It's on my shelf?
Yeah, it's on your shelf. All right, the title of this book is It Happened on Broadway, An Oral History of the Great White Way. And then underneath that it says, The Magic of American Theater in the Words of the Stars, Directors, Producers, Press Agents, Designers, and Playwrights who liked it, who made it, yeah. Yeah, so this is it's a husband and wife team. Myrna Katz Frommer and Harvey Frommer did all of the research and put out this book. They're professors still. Now this is like something like 20 years later, but they're professors still up at Dartmouth College. Yeah. They've done other books like about the Catskills and about baseball and about but the theater is their passion. They met at NYU in undergrad, and so it's like kind of like the Rick McKay on the DVD that we, you know, what Rick did. It's kind of like they did similar work, but they put it in a book. And the book it's like more of a coffee table book. I kind of want to go in your room and just grab it just so you can see what I'm talking about. But it's like a nice
size. I'm going to go grab it.
Okay, it's on the bottom shelf. It's there. It's on down below. But it's a nice size coffee table book. So it's very glossy. It's very nice. And I think if you go on Amazon.com, there is a paperback version. So you don't have to pony up the full version if you want. But it's very nice. And inside of it, yes, they've got all of, sometimes it's quotes of the, you know, the opening story is Carol Channing talking about how she discovered that her love of performing and why she wanted to become a performer when she was a little kid and she was an only child and blah, blah, blah. And then they also have like Betty Comden and Adolph Green in conversation. So you just get that. But there's no commentary. So you don't get these people's opinions. You just have the work that they did. And they must have had to do a lot of work in order to get to all these people. Of course, what I love is that seeing, you know, this book was published in 1998, and yet here are some of the guests that you can see some of the stories that they tell in the book, and then you can go back to our interviews and hear them when we talk to them. Lynn Cario, Ted Chapin, Judy Kay, Richard Maltby, Leroy Reams, David Shire, Strauss, Tony Walton, which is an upcoming episode. And then, of course, what I love is that because it's 98 and they did the research in the 90s, all of those legends were still alive that they could talk to, like Richard Kiley and Vincent Sardi and Mary Rogers and, you know, John Raitt and Gwen Verdon. So you get the real golden age folks, and you get to hear about their experiences and why they chose to go into the business and how they got started. And the chapters are like you would expect. You know, the one chapter is called Broadway Calling. The other is called Look, Look, Look Who's Dancing Now. The X Factor. That's the craft. So each chapter is sort of a focus on a different theme. And then it's just each paragraph of the person, you know, quoted as talking is just, you know, there's no order to that. You get Carol Channing and then it's, you know, Manny Azar. So, and then I just said that there were photographs of old Broadway shows and old Broadway theater as well. So I think I always love seeing old photographs of, you know, the golden age, because I always like to try to see like the marquees and see what the city looked like and all, you know, just what that people were doing the exact same thing 100 years ago that we literally still do today, regardless of the technology. Yes, there's sound in a theater, but really people going into that black space and going away for a little while, you know, that's never changed. And I just love seeing that in old photographs. So my favorite thing is this coffee table book, It Happened on Broadway, An Oral History of the Great White Way, by the husband and wife team Frommer, Frommer. And thanks, Larry Spinelli.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? I had the book on my shelf. I've never picked it up.
I ran into Rob's room when I got here, you guys. And I've seen that before on Rob's shelf. And you do. Yeah. It's great.
I never read it.
There's so much in there, and you can jump around if you want. It's a fun book. And I love that you actually have the favorite thing already. Because I always have to go online and buy them.
Yeah.
You were like, it's a hit, this book. And I am. One more thing for me, by showing up in our apartment.
I had to get a lot of stuff when I was in LA because I couldn't go see the shows. Had to read it wherever I could, man.
I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
That's great. Now I'm going to read it tonight.
Good.
What you looking for? Did you lose something?
No, my water. Oh, here
your
it is.
Water? He found his water. Right. People, I know you're concerned. He found his water. My favorite thing, boy, I think this is so interesting. This is a YouTube clip. A YouTube clip that I had stumbled upon accidentally. It is more theater related than musical theater related. Okay. If you're willing to go with me on it.
Is it a Tony Awards clip?
No.
Okay.
No. No.
We haven't. One of those awful years, you know, when they were like sat in a semicircle on stage and they were like doing their famous monologues, yes. But out of context, and they're looking at each other, and what is going on here?
What are they doing?
I don't know. So not that.
No. I like the one. First of all, now you got me on a tangent. Let me just go back really quickly.
Sorry, guys.
I am not a fan. I was a fan. I was a fan. I was a fan when they were like, we're going to present little scenes from the plays.
Yeah.
This was done in 87, I think 88, 89, 90.
Sounds like when Lansbury was hosting. 92.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And people were like, this is so weird. I never thought it was weird. All they simply did was somebody came out and was like, in this scene, the mother has just found out that the son stole $5,000. Here you go. I was like, this is
context.
Great.
We could see a little acting. Yeah.
Then somebody, I think it was after the Coens left. Alexander Cohen and Hildy Parks.
Yeah.
Then somebody said, well, now we got to reinvent the wheel. And they did that weird shit where it was like the actors in a circle, like doing their monologues to each other. You're like, what the fuck is going on here?
That's weird.
What is this? Or do you remember the one, I think this was, somebody help me out, 92, 93, 94, one of those, where it was like, we're going to show you how a play gets put on.
Right. Well, it was probably 93 or 94 because that's when there were only two musicals. Yeah. So there was no.
And they did like Angels in America and like all the other actors like played. And like, this is how an audition goes. And like, show us how you audition for Someone to Watch Over Me.
So awkward.
And how do you stage something? Let's watch this scene from Sisters Rosenzweig. It's like, just do the freaking
just do
scene.
It. Yeah.
Sorry. Now you got me angry. Oh, anyway, man. I wish they would come back though. I wish they would keep doing little scenes from plays.
Yeah.
I was like, it worked. I don't know why you had to reinvent the wheel. No, what this
strangely
is,
enough, this is not his favorite thing,
no,
you guys.
No, it's not. You just got me on a tangent. But agree or disagree, hit me up.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
This is a clip that I discovered, and I am in love with it. And this woman, unfortunately, has passed away. But if you were around Essie, her name is Essie, E-S-E-E-E, don't bother writing it because she's not going to stay with us.
Essie, we all got pain.
Essie Koopsenet. I hope I pronounced that name correctly. Essie Koopsenet, Koopsenet, K-U-P-C-I-N-E-T. She was a talent coordinator for a talk show called Cup Show, K-U-P, Cup Show, K-U-P apostrophe S. It was Cup Show. Who was Cup? He was Irv. Koopsenet, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. He was a football player turned talk show host out of Chicago. I had never heard of him before. I don't know how good the show was. I don't know how much of a mainstay he was in the Chicago area. So maybe our Chicago friends can give us a hand and help us out. So why are we talking about him? Because in 1977, his wife, Essie, who was the talent coordinator of this show, thought it would be a good idea to put these four artists in a room together and just have a conversation about censorship, violence in the theater, violence on television, foul language in the theater, and what is the purpose of an artist's role? Who are these four artists in this 1977 talk show? It is.
Wait, this is like public access talk show, it sounds like.
It sounds like he was.
Sorry. I mean,
it sounds like he was on a local network in Chicago.
Yeah.
And the show was then syndicated
like
out.
Like Stairway to Stardom kind of thing?
No, I don't think it was
one
a Stairway.
One step up from
it
that?
Was one, it's higher than
all right,
that.
All right, from based sorry, on I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No.
These four people.
And I'm going to tell you, you're going to think I'm making fun of this, and I'm not making fun of it because I wish more stuff like this would happen today.
Sure.
The four guests are pre-Broadway, really, David Mamet, who they refer to as this young aspiring playwright.
Right, he's from Chicago, that's right, yeah.
Elizabeth Ashley, the great actress, who was starring in Vanities at the time at the Drury Lane. Famed film director Otto Preminger. And Lucille Ball, who is in town to collect an award and just is on the talk show.
How in the world did he assemble these? I mean,
Essie
should get some credit.
Essie We don't got pain anymore. This is one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen. They talk, first of all, for an hour. And it's, first of all, everyone's smoking.
Of course.
Everyone's smoking. It's either the most awkward production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf you've ever seen in your life, or it's like the worst situation of like where the daughter brings home the son and the future son-in-law and the parents are just sitting there. They are never on the same page. They are having all these different arguments. Lucy and Otto Preminger, Lucy's from the school of like, you just do it, kid. And then the host asked David Mamet, it says here, David, that you're a method writer. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And he goes, and he gives this long fucking explanation that makes no sense. And he goes, so I try to write with action. And Lucille Ball goes, isn't that what writing is?
Oh my God.
And they like, they don't go at it. They're just like real ballsy with each other, going after like these ideas of what censorship should be, what violence should be. There's a great scene where Lucy's like, when's the commercial? And he's like, oh, we don't do commercials here. She goes, okay. She opens up her purse while she's talking, digs around in her purse while she's talking, pulls out a pill, like takes her pill, and then like continues on talking about whatever else is going on.
It goes back to the old television where they weren't precious about what they did.
She's like stroking Otto Preminger's hand throughout the whole thing. Elizabeth Ashley tells Otto Preminger that what he's talking about is bullshit.
Oh my God.
After Lucille Ball has been like, we need to clean up language on television. And Elizabeth Ashley goes, that's bullshit. And she goes, ha! It is bullshit. So they're having a good time. David Mamet comes off so pretentious, it's ridiculous. He starts talking about Bruno Bettelheim and why that's important on television violence. And she goes, what are you talking about? It's literally like George and Martha meet Honey and Nick.
Yes.
But always like a round table discussion
talk show
in Chicago.
Like on a talk show.
And the imaginary son is poor Irv Cups in it.
And it's hosted by a former, football player, baseball player or something?
Yes.
Like a sports guy.
It's amazing. Now, I have to say, God bless him, his writing is so brilliant. David Mamet comes off so pretentious and so inarticulate.
Had he had any hits yet?
He was the wonder child of Chicago,
right,
with American Buffalo.
Yes.
But that was, we didn't have Glengarry Glen Ross at this time. We didn't really have the huge ascent. Elizabeth Ashley, great actress, who had a nervous breakdown and talks openly on there about, like, I had a nervous breakdown and I went away for a while. And Lucy's like, you were in the loony bin. And she goes, yeah, I put myself in the loony bin. It's amazing.
Whoa.
I think Lucy talking about the fact that, like, her type of comedy isn't going to be popular anymore, and maybe David Mamet could write one of her episodes before. They confront Otto Preminger about the violence that he uses on set and the fights he's had with actors. But what I find so interesting about it, yes, it's funny because you're like, it's like, sounds like a joke. Like, Lucille Ball and David Mamet walk into a bar.
Yeah.
It's not. What I want to applaud about this show is you're watching four artists who are at the top of their game discussing what art means without commercial. Without plugging anything. No one is there to plug anything.
Right.
They're all working on projects, and you have no idea that they're all working on projects. They just want to have this discussion about what does art mean, and what is the role of censorship, and how much violence is too much violence, what is the American taste like. I don't know where we have this today.
Where a conversation like that would happen?
For an hour, talking about so many different topics revolving the arts and culture and government.
Theater Talk is the only place I can think capitalism. Of. Like, but Theater Talk won't do that. They won't go that far.
No, Theater Talk is
Charlie Rose, maybe. Are we allowed to say his name anymore? I mean, I don't know.
But even that is like one-on-one, and what are you plugging?
You're right, and it's always through some person's like press agent that got them the gig on the TV show to push their book or whatever.
But
this is just four random people that just because they were free and in Chicago that day, they got together to have like a chit-chat.
Yeah, four distinct artists who all have different viewpoints. I love it. I love it. And the reason I'm mentioning it today as a favorite thing is because I would love to see more of this because I think there's an audience for it. No one's plugging anything. No one is yelling and screaming at each other impolitely. Right. All the topics are articulate. While David Mamet, like I said, is a little long-winded and a little pretentious, he's still making very valid, wonderful points.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that they're not all from the same world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
A stage actress, television actress, director, writer, playwright.
When you came over the other day, we watched that Dinah Shore clip.
Oh, yeah.
Of Mormon. It reminds me a little bit of that, even though you had, we watched 1975 special, Ethel Merman on this Dinah Shore show, but they had, it was like a salute to Broadway, and they had Jack Cassidy and Michelle Lee, Robert Morris, Merman, who was the other one? I forget.
But Phil Silvers.
Phil Silvers, all right. And they were all, but they all like didn't really know each other. Like they, of course, like the older ones did, Jack Cassidy and Merman, but they, it was kind of these random people and watching them talk over each other and talk at each other because no one had practice like they do today where everything's recorded for posterity, so everyone's very careful how they talk now.
Yes.
And I loved how just more real they were in the 70s. So I wish we had that. I wish we had more. Because I think today, people would be way more precious with what they would say.
Absolutely.
You would never have Ball and Elizabeth Ashley and even Mamet probably to be talking that open if they knew that 50 years later we'd be watching it today.
I agree wholeheartedly.
But I wish that we could live in that fantasy land.
I wish so, too. I wish so, too. So anyway, I think it's really wonderful. I think it's a fun thing. It's not one of the ones that we normally recommend where you can like turn it on and like go around and doing your bit and like laughing in the back. I think you actually have to sit down
and just enjoy it.
55 minutes. Yeah. So the way to find it is you go to YouTube and you just type in Cups Show, K-U-P apostrophe S show, and then just type in Lucille Ball. And it should be one of the first things that comes up. And like I said, it's from 1977. It's, to me, it's just a really fascinating discussion amongst four artists talking about things that we as artists don't really talk about so much anymore. So anyway, that is mine. I hope you enjoy it. Enjoy Lucy, Otto, David, and Elizabeth. And then go see them at Drury Lane.
Yeah, I was going to say Virginia Woolf. That's awesome. And when while you're there, you can check out the book It Happened on Broadway, An Oral History of the Great White Way.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, listeners. We're so thankful for you.
We are indeed. Till next time.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.